Salam alaikum and welcome to Remember Palestine with me, Lauren Booth. This week in the West Bank and Jerusalem, children have once again been targeted by Israeli forces for illegal abduction and incarceration. On the political stage, the Turkish government continues to demand justice for those murdered by Israeli forces on last year's flotilla, and attempts by the Palestinian leadership to have a state approved by the UN in September continue to meet with US and Israeli opposition. Meanwhile, internationally, a new single calling for a free Palestine is causing an internet storm. All of those stories coming up. But I'm going to go live now to Ramallah, where our correspondent Sari Al-Khalili has been following the news of those child abductions. Sari, welcome to back to Remember Palestine.
Thank you, Lauren.
You're in Ramallah, but this news is from Hebron and Jerusalem. Can we begin with Hebron first? Three children taken by Israeli forces. Can you explain the conditions that they were taken in?
They were taken to be interrogated as usual, suspected of throwing stones towards the Israeli military jeeps. They were detained for hours, at least 5 hours, questioned. We're talking about children below the age of 16 here. One of them is a 9-year-old boy. The most shocking story that we should focus on, I guess, that 7-year-old boy who was detained in Jerusalem, Lauren. A 7-year-old boy who can barely hold a stone.
And
what on earth?
Were these children taken from their homes? Were they taken from the streets? And were they interrogated? You mentioned the word interrogation. What sort of treatment have they had?
First, some of them are taken from their houses, and we witness some sort of fights with the parents even. They are stolen from the hands of their parents, sometimes from their beds. And sometimes while they're playing with their friends on the streets, and it happens randomly sometimes during the confrontations, you know, with the Israeli forces. They can't take those young boys who can run away. They are able to take those children who can't escape from the hands of the Israeli troops. They are taken to detention facilities in Israel to be interrogated, and sometimes severely tortured by the troops. I have a story of a young boy, as I told you, in Silwan town close to Jerusalem. During one of the protests, the Israeli troops followed a boy, a 7-year-old boy, to his home. They took him and they questioned him, reportedly tortured him as we were told by his father. He was slapped in the face, and he was threatened to be killed, as far as the boy said, and he could barely speak.
Sorry, thank you for that. I'm just going to, there have been reports into the mistreatment of children in the hands of Israeli soldiers in custody. But just quickly, what is the atmosphere like now this weekend in the West Bank, as we've got protests coming up on Sunday near you?
Yeah, well, the Palestinians are preparing for massive protests throughout the West Bank and also the Gaza Strip, to commemorate the anniversary of the Nakba, where the Israeli forces occupied the remaining lands of Palestine back in 1967. We're talking about tens of thousands of Palestinians are expected to gather in the cities in Ramallah and also some of the villages adjacent to the Israeli apartheid wall. Confrontations are expected, Lauren.
Well, we'll be thinking of those people this weekend, and we'll get a report from you next week. Thank you very much, Sari Al-Khalili, there in the West Bank. Well, meanwhile, in Gaza, the proposed opening of the Rafah crossing has been talked about for months, ever since Mubarak's removal from the Egyptian government. But has it happened? This report from the Gaza Strip.
The mood was of hope and happiness, nearly a week on from the permanent reopening of the Rafah crossing. 28th of May was an historic day for the Palestinians in Gaza, as at long last, restrictions on the border have been eased. Egyptian authorities waived visa requirements for most Palestinians entering and leaving Gaza, except for males under the age of 40 and over the age of 18.
I want to thank the Egyptian government for this positive step. Opening the Rafah crossing will help us to leave and come easily without any obstacles.
First of all, I want to thank the Egyptian government and the people for opening the Rafah crossing. We want it opened at all times, 24 hours a day.
3 days after the reopening of the Rafah crossing, Hamas Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh called on Palestinians to refrain from any breach of Egyptian security.
By maintaining the Egyptian security, we maintain our security. We must respect the Egyptian sovereignty and the success of the Egyptian revolution, which is very beneficial to us.
Analysts hope that Cairo would allow the importation of goods, including construction materials, into the war-battered seaside territory.
The end of the Mubarak regime should have necessarily meant the end of the deadly hermetic siege imposed on the Palestinians of Gaza. What the Palestinians of Gaza actually were expecting is that the reopening of the Rafah crossing, but it is also one step in the right direction, because the reopening of the Rafah crossing guarantees the freedom of movement of people, but it also should mean the flow, the free flow of goods, material, especially cement.
Now it remains to be seen if the current changes can make any real improvement to the economic situation for Gazans. Analysts believe that although it is virtually certain that some will try to claim otherwise, the opening of Rafah does not mean that the siege of Gaza is over. Ashraf Shannon, reporting for Remember Palestine Gaza.
Well, this week saw commemoration ceremonies in Turkey for the participants of the Freedom Flotilla killed last year by Israeli forces. A year on, and what is the legal position of those whose relatives died on the Mavi Marmara? And what of the missing belongings of all the passengers? Joining me now in the studio to discuss these issues is the co-founder of the Palestine Legal Aid Fund, Rashad Yacoub. Rashad, welcome back to Remember Palestine.
Thank you, Lauren.
So a year on, we've still got 9 dead Turkish civilians. A lot going on at the high political level between Turkey and Israel. But what on the human level? What on the rights level and the legal level? What actions have been taken to on behalf of the flotilla participants?
Well, I mean, the efforts in terms of the legal response to the attack on the flotilla climaxed in a conference of lawyers of about 110 lawyers, which I attended from all around the world, who were representing individual passengers who'd been on the various different boats.
So does that mean there's 110 individual cases being considered?
Well, probably more, probably more. And these were individual lawyers who'd been sent to attend, including ourselves. And the resolution of that Doha conference, which was sponsored by Fukura, was basically, let's develop a coordinated strategy and basically take on the task of identifying essentially the soft spots, where in terms of the international legal mechanisms, where can we divert the most resources, and how can we share intelligence and evidence to make sure the Israelis don't basically divide and rule the evidence.
I would have thought, so there's the Turkish case, they'll be managed, because that's about deaths. But are there then cases, for example, for trauma?
Sure. Example would be, for example, the case of Ehsan, who's a British and Israeli dual citizen.
Yeah.
He was shot in the back of the head. The bullet ricocheted and actually left through his mouth, and he survived, you know, amazingly. He was also shot in the stomach. Now, to date, despite representation by his British lawyers, despite a clear-cut case in terms of illegitimate loss of life, yeah, as a result of Israeli action, to date the Israelis have not conceded a single inch in terms of culpability, liability or responsibility. What they have done as part of the drama of the UN fact-finding mission and the consequences of that is make some paltry offers to return some goods, which again have been unspecified, to individuals through some sort of third-party threat agency. And that is about as far as... And even that hasn't actually resulted in any return. So from a legal point of view, the way we've been working, the key opportunity is universal jurisdiction.
Mm.
The only mechanism that basically allows people to be tried outside Israel is UJ.
And so let's just make this clear for viewers. Universal jurisdiction means you'd have to wait for one of the commanders or soldiers to leave Israel, who's named in a case, who would then be taken by a member of the public potentially in signatory countries?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, that's basically in order to effect an arrest
right.
warrant. So that's to do with actually custody.
Okay.
In terms of actually the legal case, Spanish courts, Dutch courts, British courts, South African courts,
yeah.
a number of universal jurisdiction organizations, which are basically signatories to the Treaty of Rome, have the ability to basically try people in absentia.
Okay.
So that's the mechanism that effectively we are using. You probably have witnessed the changes or the attempts in change in law in Britain, which have resulted from the Libby-Zivny arrest warrant attempt last year.
Mm.
So despite attempts to roll back the law on that, there's sufficient mechanisms in place to start off UJ actions. And that's certainly something which has started. The second level, which is quite interesting from a flotilla perspective, is for not to miss the bigger picture. I mean, the whole point of the flotilla was to protest in terms of the illegal siege.
Mm.
And, you know, we're sure that the Israelis' argument will be this is a natural defense of our shores, and therefore we've done a response which is proportionate in terms of defending our shoreline. The heart of our
shoreline.
Well, exactly. The heart of our legal case opens up not just the individuals who suffered, but actually the central premise to this, which is the fact that Israel has basically, in international waters, sought to defend something which it doesn't own.
Brilliant.
And that really then opens up in a natural court
of
law.
My head is spinning. These are such high points to fight on. Have you got the best lawyers?
Well, it's actually quite straightforward. If somebody says, well, we were defending our home from all these assailants, and it turns out in law that it's not their home, and they were the illegal trespassers, that's a massive victory for anybody who's actually prosecuting. So it's actually allowed the legal debate on the status of Palestine, and especially the siege on Gaza, to actually enter international courts as a result of the bravery and the sacrifice of these individuals who boarded those flotillas. So we hope, inshallah, you know, in subsequent years, more people continue that pressure, because it results in more legal opportunities to hold Israel accountable.
Thanks very much for that excellent summary. Now, in London, survivors of the Mavi Marmara joined with supporters to remember those who lost their lives. More in this report.
Nine humanitarian aid workers died and dozens were injured during the attack by Israeli commando forces on civilian passengers on the Mavi Marmara. This was the largest ship of six, which was part of the Freedom Flotilla, organised by a humanitarian coalition to take aid to Gaza in May 2010. At an event in London to commemorate the first anniversary of this attack, there is a lot of sadness. But, as Lindsay German from Stop the War Coalition says, there is also a sense of hope that their deaths were not in vain, as they have already inspired others to embark on similar missions.
But the other reason that we should look with some hope to the future is not just the struggle of the Palestinians, but also what has happened this year. That is what an uprising and a revolution can do.
With the same sense of optimism, Ben White, author of the book Apartheid, A Beginner's Guide, highlights that there is also a special connection between the Flotilla Initiative and the uprisings in the Middle East and North Africa.
If you place the flotilla in the context of the changes that have been taking place in the Middle East, you can probably make an interesting point that first flotilla, or indeed the whole initiative of the Freedom Flotillas, was almost a precursor of the kind of uprisings that have taken place in different countries in the Middle East, in the sense that it's based on people power.
What is certain for Ben White is that the flotillas are both a humanitarian and a political endeavour. During the event, the author did not hesitate to make that clear to any critics of the international coalition.
It's obvious that the flotilla is more than just about simply delivering supplies to Gaza. It's actually about saying, it's about resisting Israel's politics of blockade and siege. It's about resisting an Israeli policy of collective punishment. It's not just simply a protest against what's going on in Gaza. It's a protest against Israel's policies towards the Palestinians as a whole.
As part of the fight to support the Palestinians, the commemoration event in London also served as the best stage to launch One World's new single, Freedom for Palestine, which aims to get into the UK music charts.
So the single you heard about there is set to be released in July, but it's already causing a huge stir on the internet. Joining me now is one of the driving forces behind that new track, the guitarist and composer Dave Randall. Dave, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, I have been following with interest the last 48 hours to do with the single. On Facebook, there's, my Facebook page is almost flooded with connections to the single. Who's in it, and why do you think it's causing a stir?
Well, we're very pleased about the stir. You're right. In the first 3 days, we've had well over 120,000 plays on YouTube. It's a fantastic response. Some of my bandmates from Faithless are in the song. Jamie Catto from One Giant Leap, members of the London Community Gospel Choir, and a gospel choir from South Africa. Mm-hmm. That was a very interesting session. Mm. I mean, I think people in South Africa get the apartheid analogy between the bad old days of South Africa and Israel now, Palestine now. They get that immediately. So massive support in South Africa. We've got the gospel choir there. And then in the video, we've got some notables. We've got Michael Rosen, the poet. We've got Mark Thomas, the comedian, who's been a big supporter of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And Loki, the rapper, and Jodie McIntyre. Yeah. There's a real sense of momentum. It's been fantastically exciting.
So I think what seems to be happening here is you've wanted to create a pop song, first and foremost, that has the words freedom for Palestine in it, and really move it from a fringe argument to mainstream. Is that happening?
I think it is happening. We've had some huge endorsements. I think that the song, if what we would like to try to do is get the song into the chart here in the UK, and actually I hope that your viewers will help us to do that by pre-ordering the song in this pre-release period. They can do that from iTunes or HMV Digital. If we get enough pre-orders in and enough sales during the week of release, we can get it into the chart. Mm. And I think if we get it into the chart, it will be difficult for the BBC not to play the song on the radio. And
You can't put the words Free Palestine together, as we know on the
BBC. It's going to be very hard. If we get the song into the charts, it's going to make it much harder for them to censor it or to ignore it. And I think hearing that song, or at least seeing it on the internet, will give confidence to people to stand up and say, actually, it's true, what's going on in Palestine is absolutely outrageous. The way that the Israelis are occupying the West Bank and Gaza and East Jerusalem is unacceptable, and so on. It will give confidence to people to have the debate, I hope.
Now, I saw something amazing on Facebook that I could hardly believe. You appear to have been endorsed by Coldplay. Is that true?
They put a very lovely message on their Facebook page saying that their friends were involved in the single, which was, of course, is absolutely fantastic.
And I think Coldplay has about 12 million friends on Facebook.
Yeah, they're pretty
popular. That's huge, isn't it?
And there have been other endorsements from quite unexpected places. The legendary American writer Alice Walker sent the most amazing quote. I don't think we've put it up on Facebook yet, but I'm sure we will next week. All sorts of messages of support coming through. So it's been fantastic.
OK, well, let's see if we can now go to a clip and give the viewers a taste of Freedom for Palestine, released in July.
Enough illegal occupation, violence and racial segregation, all religious communities unite. Freedom is a human right.
We are the people, and this is our time. Stand up, sing out for Palestine.
Well, I'm sorry that was such a short clip, but we've got you here, so we will go online and listen to the rest of it. It's my recommendation. How hard has it been for you personally to get this made and to get people interested in the question of Palestine? You've been, you know the situation there in the West Bank, what the wall is doing to the land of Palestine. But when you have conversations with other people in the music industry, is it difficult to bring the point across?
I think that people are often confused when it comes to Israel-Palestine. People often think it's two equals, a dispute over land between two equals and so on. But of course, as we know, the truth couldn't be further from that. In actual fact, it's one Western-backed, well-armed and well-funded state illegally occupying a displaced and impoverished and stateless people. That's the Palestinians. And I think when you start to explain this, and when you start to talk about what you yourself have seen, I mean, I was there just a couple of weeks ago in the West Bank, and as you know, it's absolutely horrifying. You see Palestinians being treated by the Israeli state, by the army, as if they were animals. Mm. You see Palestinians being humiliated on a daily basis. Mm. You see Palestinians being collectively punished just because they exist. And when you see that, you have to do whatever you can. So the song for me was, I'm not sure that labour of love is the right expression, but it was something I felt I had to write. I had to do something, however small, to send a message of solidarity to the Palestinians.
Well, congratulations, Dave. It's not a small thing. It's looking like a very big addition to support for Palestine. What about, you know, at some point having a festival for Palestine? Have you thought along those lines of people making those requests? And also support in America. It's fine to get it in the charts in Britain. That's a battle. That's interesting. Mm. What about wider context?
Well, I suppose we start from wherever we can, and the song has been my starting point. I would certainly be keen to get involved with a festival. I'm not sure whether the festival would be here or perhaps in the West Bank. I mean, I don't know. I'd certainly be interested in supporting that sort of initiative.
You know, we're talking about a Live Aid for Palestine. That can't be far off, I wouldn't think.
I've no idea. I mean, I would certainly like to be involved if that is something that people want to make happen. I'd be willing to get involved with
and
that.
And just finally, an extraordinary outburst from a presenter on Fox News, a US channel, calling this single evil. What do you say to that?
Oh, well, it's a completely mad suggestion, obviously. But it relates to your question about America. According to this individual, there's quite a lot of support in America for what we're saying. And so that gives me a great reason to feel hopeful.
Dave Randall, thanks very much for joining us again and best of luck. It's time now for our weekly look at pro-Palestinian activism across the globe.
Activists plan to travel from Africa to Gaza as part of the first aid convoy from the region. They will depart from Durban in South Africa later this month to travel by land via Zimbabwe, Zambia, Malawi, Tanzania, Kenya, Uganda, Sudan and Egypt to the besieged strip. The convoy has been organised by the South African Relief Agency and will carry aid including wheelchairs, medical supplies, stationery and generators. The reality of struggling to survive under occupation has been brought to life in a new book based on interviews with 300 young people in the West Bank. Voices from the West Bank by Chris Jones and Michael LaValette gives a voice to those whose stories of personal tragedy and injustice go unheard. The book will be launched in Manchester next week and in London at the Marxism Festival, which starts at the end of June. Transgressions by the Israeli army in Palestine have been disclosed by a group of former soldiers in an internet campaign launched last month. Video testimonies by around 20 soldiers were posted on YouTube as part of the efforts by Breaking the Silence, an organization of former soldiers aiming to raise awareness of military violations.
And that's it. That's all we have time for on this week's Remember Palestine. Join us next time for more news from the front line of the new Middle East. Thank you.